All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going deep on a Supreme Court case that I think you could say really shook up how we elect people to Congress, Wesbury v. Sanders. And this one, folks, this one has some serious lasting impact, even today.
You got that right. Big one for our listeners out there, future legal eagles. You know, really got to wrap your heads around Wesbury. I mean, we're talking about voting rights. We're talking about representation in Congress. It's a cornerstone. And today we're going to, you know, take it apart, see how it ticks, and figure out just how important it still is today.
So to kind of get everyone in the right headspace for this case, we need to rewind the clock a bit back to the early 60s.
Yeah.
Okay, imagine this. You've got congressional districts in the same state, but their populations are totally out of whack.
Mm-hmm.
Huge discrepancies, right?
Yeah.
Especially between cities and those more rural areas.
Think about Georgia. That's where this whole legal battle went down. They had this 5th congressional district, covered a big chunk of Atlanta, right? And that district, it had something like 2 or 3 times the population of some of the other districts in the state. So let that sink in. You're in Atlanta, you cast your vote, but it doesn't really pack the same punch as someone's vote in a smaller rural district, not even close.
Now, back then, the courts, they basically tried to stay out of these kinds of fights, right? They called it the political question doctrine. Basically, this was the idea that, you know, these issues, they were just too political. Better to let the politicians handle it, not the judges. And the Supreme Court, they kind of backed that up with their earlier decision in Colgrove v. Green.
Super important point there. Before Wesbury came along, everyone was looking at Colgrove and thinking, okay, so the courts, they just don't want to touch anything to do with drawing those district lines. Too messy, too political.
But the voters in Georgia's 5th, those folks in Atlanta, they felt like this hands-off approach by the courts. It was stepping on their rights, you know. They were saying, hey, these population differences, they're huge, and they're making our votes practically meaningless. They felt like their constitutional rights, they were being ignored.
Yeah.
And you know what? That feeling of being shut out, that's a big part of what led to this Wesbury v. Sanders case.
Yeah, it's wild how these things kind of snowball, you know. So this case, it works its way through the courts and bam, lands right in the lap of the Supreme Court. So what was the big legal question they had to tackle? The million-dollar question, right, the one that justices had to wrestle with, was actually pretty simple to understand, even if the answer wasn't so simple. Does the Constitution, straight up, require congressional districts in a state to have, you know, roughly the same number of people? Basically, does fair representation apply to how we carve up these districts?
Okay, so big question, big implications. How did the court ultimately answer that question?
The court said yes, big yes. They said one person, one vote. That's the rule. This is what's required when you're drawing up those congressional districts. And they found this principle right there in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 2, which says representatives are chosen by the people of the several states.
Chosen by the people. Sounds simple enough. So what was Justice Black's big argument there? How'd they get from those few words to the whole one person, one vote idea?
Justice Black, he really zeroed in on the wording, chosen by the people. They interpreted that to mean that each vote, yours, mine, anyone's, should have the same weight in a congressional election, at least within their state. If you have districts with wildly different populations, well, that means people in crowded districts, their votes are watered down. They don't carry the same weight as someone in a smaller district. So basically, it comes down to fairness, you know, equal representation. That's the idea.
So it wasn't just looking at those words in isolation, right? They also looked at the historical context, like what the guys who wrote the Constitution intended.
Right. They dove deep into all that. The majority opinion, they really combed through the records from the Constitutional Convention, trying to show that the framers, they absolutely wanted a House of Representatives where states got seats based on how many people they had. That was the whole idea. So if you've got these big population gaps between districts in the same state, well, to them, that messed up the whole point of proportional representation.
So it's like, if you're going to have states represented proportionally in the House, then the districts within those states should kind of follow the same idea, right? Bingo. Now, Justice Black, he got that it's not always possible to get those district populations perfectly equal. There are practical things to consider, but the court was clear. States got to try their best to get those populations balanced. They can't just ignore these big differences without a really good reason.
Which brings us to one of those super quotable lines from this whole decision, am I right?
Yeah, this is the one everyone remembers. Justice Black wrote, "One man's vote in a congressional election is to be worth as much as another's." Bam! Powerful stuff. That pretty much sums up the whole point of one person, one vote. And remember Colgrove v. Green, that case we talked about earlier, the court in Westbury was saying, nah, we're not backing down from this issue anymore. They were ready to get involved, make sure those districts were fair.
Of course, it's the Supreme Court. You know there are going to be some folks who disagree. What were some of the arguments against the majority opinion? Okay, so Justice Harlan, he wrote the main dissent. He basically said, look, the Constitution gives states and Congress the power to decide how to draw up these districts. He thought the majority opinion was going too far, basically forcing their own idea of representation onto everyone. And his big point was, yeah, one person, one vote sounds nice, but it's not written in the Constitution, and it wasn't what the framers intended.
So Harlan's position was that the court was reading stuff into the Constitution that just wasn't there.
Exactly. He thought the court was butting into something that should have been left to the politicians, you know, how to run elections. And he was worried about the court basically substituting their judgment for the states and Congress.
And Justice Clark, he also had a partial dissent, right? But wasn't his reasoning a bit different?
Yeah. So Justice Clark, he was interesting. He agreed that the court should deal with this whole messed up district thing, that it was a real problem the courts could tackle. But he thought they were using the wrong part of the Constitution. He liked the 14th Amendment better, specifically the Equal Protection Clause. His thinking was, when you've got these big population gaps between districts, you're treating voters unequally.
So same destination, different road.
What?
Clark thought the court could step in, but they should have used the 14th Amendment as their basis, not Article 1.
That's it. He thought the Equal Protection Clause, the one that says states can't deny anyone equal protection under the law, well, that was a real key here, unequal voting power. That's denying equal protection, he said. And he even thought maybe the court should give Georgia a chance to fix the problem themselves before jumping in with a solution.
So, okay, Westbury comes down, and it basically reshapes how congressional districts are drawn all over the country. What was the immediate fallout?
Man, this decision, it sent shockwaves. States all over, they had to go back to the drawing board, literally. They had to redraw those district maps to get those populations closer to equal. And you know what? It wasn't just some technical change. It shifted political power big time. Cities and suburbs, they gained a lot of ground because they'd been underrepresented before.
Yeah, I bet that didn't go over too smoothly with everybody.
Yeah.
All those politicians scrambling to redraw their maps, it must have been a real mess.
It was. And Westbury, it didn't just change the maps. It brought the courts right into the middle of this whole redistricting fight, which, you know, even today is super controversial. It raised all these questions about what the courts should be doing, right? Judicial activism versus judicial restraint. Are they protecting our rights or are they meddling in politics?
In Westbury, it didn't stop there, right? It really set the stage for other big one person, one vote decisions.
Totally. Think of Westbury as the foundation. A few years later, they had Reynolds v. Sims, and they used the same logic to say, hey, state legislative districts, those got to be based on equal population, too. So Westbury, it wasn't just about Congress. It affected how states drew their own legislative maps. It was huge. It meant that one person, one vote had to be followed at the state level, too.
So looking back, with all we know now, was Westbury the right call? Did the court do the right thing stepping in to protect our democracy, or were they overstepping getting into something that should have been left to the legislature?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? The debate about Westbury, it hasn't gone away. Some people, they'll tell you, man, Westbury was essential. We needed the court to fix this messed up system, make sure everyone's vote counted equally. They see it as a victory for democracy. But then you have others saying, hold on, the Constitution gives that power to the states, to Congress. The court went rogue. They forced their own ideas about representation on everyone. So yeah, big debate, still going strong.
So we talked about the political question doctrine. It was a big obstacle that the court had to overcome. How did Westbury, along with Baker v. Carr, change how the court dealt with this doctrine when it came to these redistricting cases?
Right. So remember, the political question doctrine, it basically said some stuff, it's just too political for the courts. They should stay out of it. And before Baker v. Carr, that's what happened. Courts, they didn't want to touch redistricting cases. Too hot to handle. But Baker v. Carr came along in 1962, and it was like, boom. The court said, no, we can hear these cases when you're talking about how legislative districts are drawn. Well, that's something we can review under the 14th Amendment. So they opened the door. And then Westbury walked right through it, saying the same thing about congressional districts, even though they used Article 1, not the 14th. But the point was, courts could now step in.
Okay, but here's something I think trips up a lot of folks. The majority in Westbury, they relied on Article 1, Section 2, right? But Justice Clark, He said they should have used the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment.
Mm.
So for our listeners who are, you know, really diving into the law here, what's the difference legally between using one versus the other?
Yeah, this is a good one. So the majority, they focus on Article 1, Section 2, the part about the House of Representatives, right? They said, look, the framers wanted a house where people were represented proportionally. That's what chosen by the people means. So to them, unequal districts, that goes against the whole point of the house. Clark, on the other hand, he was all about the 14th Amendment. That Equal Protection Clause, it says everyone gets treated equally under the law. And for him, unequal voting power, well, that's the definition of unequal treatment. So different parts of the Constitution, but same result in Westbury.
It makes you think, though, about what might have happened in later cases if they'd gone with Clark's reasoning. The 14th Amendment, that's a broad one. It applies to all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Article 1, that's really about how the House is structured. 14th Amendment, it's a lot wider. It could have had big implications for other voting rights cases, but we'll never know, right? They went with Article 1.
So the court in Westbury, they didn't say those districts had to be perfectly equal in population. They used this phrase, as nearly as practicable. What's that mean for states actually drawing these maps?
Well, that's the court being realistic. They know you can't always get those populations exactly the same. You got to look at geography. You got to keep cities and counties together if you can. And you want districts that make sense, you know, not just some crazy shapes. But that doesn't mean states get a free pass, as nearly as practicable. It means they got to try their best to get those populations equal. Little differences here and there, maybe that's okay. But big gaps, those raise red flags. The courts, they're going to want to know why. And you can't just use those other factors like geography as an excuse to create unequal districts that benefit one party or the other.
So, folks, bottom line, Westbury v. Sanders, it's all about one person, one vote. That's the big takeaway. And it's a cornerstone of how we run elections in the U.S.
Right on. Equal representation. That's the idea. And Westbury made that principle crystal clear.
But here's something for you to ponder. We still have gerrymandering today. We still see these fights about representation. So is as nearly as practicable, is that enough anymore? Or do we need new laws, new rules to really protect that one person, one vote idea in today's world? Big question. And no easy answers. Something to think about as you keep learning about the law and how it shapes our democracy. Thanks for diving in with us today.